All right, before we kick into this episode, I just have a quick favor to ask. If you would do me the honor of heading over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to Slow Down Man, and subscribe, first of all. And if you are on Apple Podcasts, if you can go and leave a written review, an honest review, honestly, means the world. Really appreciate it. Appreciate you listening, and enjoy this episode. All right, let's do it. Welcome. Thanks for slowing down with us. I'm Mitch. Ananda Murari. His last name rhymes with Ferrari, which is freaking awesome. Welcome to the show, brother. Thanks for slowing down with us.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on.
Right on. Before we get into anything, I just have to acknowledge this about you. And if people haven't already noticed this from the like three words you've said, but you've got to have like the most calming voice I've ever heard.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. It's the voice is such a unique thing. It's anytime I hear my voice, sometimes I recoil, especially as a musician or as a singer. Yeah. I'm like, oh, what am I saying? What am I doing? But I appreciate that it has that effect.
Yeah, it's so funny how we do that, right? Like oftentimes when I'm saying something, I'm like, oh, that sounds good. And then I'll go back and let's do it. I'm like, who is this guy? Yeah. And what did he do with my beautiful voice?
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, just wanted to acknowledge that and to say that you should do guided meditations if you don't already.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
Okay, let's start here. You've got a workshop called E-Motion, correct?
Yeah.
Which along with that name, you have the tagline energy in motion.
Yeah.
Where does that energy, why do you look at emotion as energy in motion?
Totally. Well, it's a brilliant question. And I think it's an important one to ask ourselves is how do we look at our emotions? Right. Because I have this suspicion that, you know, a lot of times my experience has been emotion is something that I have to deal with. I have to overcome. I have to kind of stop and get back to normal. But the whole concept behind energy and motion is that emotion is a very natural thing for sentient conscious beings, which we are. And even as the word, you know, kind of artfully breaking up the word emotion, that's what emotion is. It's energy that's indicating to us something of a need, something of a desire, something of an inspiration, a direction that we can take. So the workshop's really about channeling, learning how to channel and really understand our emotion rather than being an obstacle, but being a supporting force towards growth and transformation. And when we can understand to channel our own emotions, to hold that space for our own emotions, right? Then being able to do that for others as well. Because a lot of times in relationship, not just intimate relationships or romantic relationships, but any type of relationship, when there is an exchange of emotions, if there is a blockage around that, if I'm closed off to experiencing or accepting another person's emotions or my emotions in relationship with that other person, then I may start fighting about something secondary. Like we may start disagreeing about something secondary rather than recognize, oh, there's an opportunity here for us to take this conflict, dive deeper into connection, for us to take this disagreement, understand each other's needs, and to ultimately create a deeper sense of community overall with all our relationships.
Right.
Oh, so, dude. So energy, when emotion becomes stagnant, that's when we get issues and challenges. But when emotion is moving as a guide, and it's allowing us to question and kind of get curious, that's when emotion becomes a very powerful tool in transformation.
That's a good point. I've never heard that before, but like it literally the word emotion is in the word emotion. And I've never really acknowledged that, but that makes so much sense that it is a real thing, like a thing that is flowing through us. That is, it's an energy, like you say. Going back to, I love what you said about holding space for those emotions as they move through us, and which allows us to hold space for others. And dude, like I've talked about this on the show before, but it's like, I for years in relation with others was completely closed off. And the reason was because I wasn't connected with my own emotions. And once I dug deep into my own and I started holding space for my own emotions, then I was able to hold space for others. And that was the process. But do you think it's possible to hold space for others' emotions if we are not holding space for our own? Like, is that possible?
Yeah, it's always this harmony that we have to strike when dealing with one sense, contradicting ideas. And that's when knowledge really comes in. It's knowledge. Knowledge means I'm able to take what is ostensibly contradicting, what is ostensibly opposite, and find the harmony. I avoid the word balance a lot of times, because it indicates kind of two different things, when rather I see it as like musical notes. It's on the spectrum, right? All the notes are existing simultaneously, and all the notes are existing in the harmonic sequence and kind of, you know, in vibration altogether. Mm-hmm. Harmony means those two notes are playing at the same time, even if they're like the same note, right? You can harmonize a G with a G. I can play a G on the piano and a G on the guitar, and those two notes, even though they're the same, right? There's harmony in there. There's an effect. There's an event. There's a feeling, an experience that takes place from that harmony. So similarly with ideas, it's not always that ideas that appear contradictory are opposite or different that I have to balance them, but really understanding what's the beautiful harmony that I can find within this. I digress. So to come back to this statement of, can I hold space for others' emotions if I'm not holding space for my own? I think of this example that a coach of mine gave me, which is the beach ball example, the emotional beach ball. A lot of times if I have some emotion that's coming up, anger, resentment, fear, even quote unquote, you know, emotions that are more connotatively positive, happiness, joy, love, right? If these things are coming up, but then I suppress them, it's as if I'm in a pool and I'm trying to push down the ball, the beach ball under the water. I'm spending so much energy trying to push down that beach ball. And the deeper that I push that beach ball, the more that the force of the air wanting to come to the surface within the beach ball, it's the force is increasing, right? So I find it's very difficult. And this is where we get caretaker burnout, right? When you have people that are in service positions, leadership positions, that are trying to support others and they're not taking care of themselves. They're not addressing that beach ball of emotion that's going on. So much of their energy becomes zapped because of trying to push that beach ball under the water. Yeah. And ultimately then what happens is, you know, I'm pushing it, the further it goes down, you know, if you like do one little movement, then the whole beach ball shoots up, right? And then we get...
Right.
Kind of vicious responses sometimes, like, whoa, where did that come from? Yeah. It's like, oh, I was pushing down this beach ball of emotion. That's why I reacted so intensely.
That's such a good I've never heard that before. That's a really good analogy. I think everyone probably, or I shouldn't say everyone, but you know, a good number of us have an experience with that, with trying to shove a beach ball down. And that's true. As the farther you push it and push it, eventually it's going to pop up. It's not, you're never going to get to a point, a depth where it just stays there. And it's like, okay, it's good. It's safe. And it's just going to stay there now. Like, no, the pressure builds up and it's going to come flying back at you.
Yeah.
So good, man.
And another thing to kind of extend that analogy a bit further is, you know, say, you know, the beach ball is multiple colors. And I'm like, I just don't like the red stripes and I don't like the green stripes. So I want to push the red stripes and the green stripes, but there's also blue and yellow stripes on that beach ball simultaneously. And me pushing down some of the stripes is going to push down all the stripes in some way or another. It's going to prevent me from functioning naturally as my emotions arise.
Yeah.
It's going to create a dysfunction.
So you're saying if you, for example, are selective about the emotions, like you're saying that the colors on the beach ball represent different emotional experiences that we have. And if say I'm like, oh yeah, I'll feel happiness, I'll feel joy, I'll feel all these good emotions, but like, oh, sadness, like anger, no, I'm going to shove those colors down. But you're saying that if you shove even just those colors down, it's going to shove the happiness, the joy, and our capacity to feel all the whole range of colors and emotions, correct?
Yeah, 100%. And oftentimes I feel like the natural question is bubbling up. It's like, okay, does that mean that I lose control of myself and I just express every emotion that comes to my mind? I'm just kind of, I remove the filter. And that's, you know, it's interesting that our minds always kind of go to these stark dualities.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
And why it's so necessary to find harmony in ideas. Because experiencing my emotion, experiencing my experience doesn't mean I just let loose and I give up all filters and I become inappropriate, right? It means that I am courageous enough to take note and to experience what I'm experiencing, to accept and recognize, oh yeah, I'm experiencing anger. A lot of times what happens, and this is another part about energy and motion, is another way to block it is that I become a victim. You made me angry, or you made me sad, or you made me this or that, right? Taking the control, the power that I have over my emotion or over my opportunity to experience my emotion and putting it onto someone else, right? This is another way that that we block ourselves from experiencing our experience and in a wholesome way, kind of approaching our whole self.
Yeah, that's it. It's like I know I've done this a million times. It's like where, you know, if I'm really angry and I'm like, well, they did this to me. And it almost is like releasing accountability for that emotion that I'm experiencing. And it's like, they did this to me. They have the power over this on me. And in doing that, it's like giving away I don't know if power is the right word, but the, I guess power that I have over that emotion to acknowledge it, experience it, and let it flow through as it should.
Yeah. Yeah. And to use that moment as an opportunity for growth and transformation. You know, a lot of times if I don't experience my experience, that situation, that circumstance, that grudge that I'm holding against somebody, that resentment that I'm holding against somebody just becomes an obstacle that's going to take away my right as a sentient, you know, transforming, expanding, growing, living entity,
right,
to utilize that moment, that difficulty, that challenge for growth. And so becoming responsible for our emotions is such a huge and courageous thing. And I say that because it's very natural that I want to disassociate from that responsibility, or from I like to break this word down to my ability to respond, right? My ability to respond to a moment, to a situation, to a circumstance.
Yeah.
It takes courage to do that.
To respond. Yeah.
Yeah. To respond to the challenge, to the invitation that life and circumstance is giving me, the invitation to grow.
Yeah.
To respond to that takes a lot of courage.
Right. Yeah. And that gets back to, like you said, that when we're giving the power of our emotions away and we're saying like we're blaming those on someone else, like you made me feel this way. Again, that's looking at it from that victim mentality. Whereas what you just described to me is totally the opposite. It's like this, this mentality where it's like, oh, I'm feeling this way. What an opportunity. And maybe it's not a good feeling, right? Usually it's not a good feeling. But let's explore this. What an opportunity to figure out. You mentioned earlier, it's like an indicator of many things, of desire, of something not sitting right, of whatever. And I totally resonate with that. It's like there's so much knowledge in these emotions if we really do just freaking dig into them.
Yeah. Yeah. And to find that treasure, it's like it's literally and kind of I find this from a lot of the, you know, ancient wisdom culture that, you know, in general, like you find wisdom culture and it talks about this becoming radically responsible. Right. And it's in many ways it's like the treasure map, these ancient texts, right? This treasure map. And when I'm experiencing that resistance or that emotion or kind of something going on inside me, it's like X marks the spot. Dig here and uncover something very valuable. Right. And I think it's what's interesting about relationships. A lot of time clients will come to me in for relationship coaching. And it's this idea that, you know, it's because this person's doing this, this person's doing this. And I really work with them to say, well, what if we look at these challenges that are arising as the X marks the spot to dig deeper and to find a treasure of intimacy that's just been waiting for us. Mm-hmm. Right. And if we're practiced doing that with ourselves, that when I come up into a challenge or an obstacle or a situation that's creating tension and creating resistance in my body emotionally, then, and if I'm practiced of diving into that and digging deep into that and understanding, okay, what's the gem that I'm supposed to mine here? Right. Yeah. How much more are we prepared then for relationships when that is, you know, that's the benediction of relationships, is that it's like a pressure cooker for all those things to come out. Because not only you're dealing with your own, but you're dealing with the other person's journey in that excavation of truth.
Yeah. Oh man, I love that. The finding the gems. And I know as a man, and I don't know if you can relate to this, but like with my emotions for a long time, it was like, like we have this drive to solve, right? Mm. To solve the problem, to figure out a solution, to get to a resolution.
Yeah.
And for a long time for me, that meant like, oh, I'm feeling sad. How do I make myself feel, how do I fix this feeling and make myself feel better? And then it would go to like overworking out, like overeating shitty food, like just trying to, you know, fix that in the short term. And it's been a journey of still acknowledge, like, that's my drive, is I'm not just going to like sit with this and, you know, and not do anything. Like, that's just not my nature. I've understood that. But instead being like, okay, let's sit with this and solve, where is this coming from? Like, let's really dig in and make that the puzzle that we're trying to solve, as opposed to let's try to get to a better feeling in this moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like how you brought that up, that it's easy to stereotype what it means to like sit with the emotion. But I think like for you and for many people, it'll look very different. Like for me, maybe it's like going on a walk, or like really getting into writing something, or playing music, or, you know, speaking with someone that's not going to try and fix my problem for me. Right.
Right.
For other people, it's like working out, or it's cooking, or it's doing something. Right. And it's the sensitive spot is, am I doing this to run away from, or am I doing this to embrace? Mm-hmm. Right. And I think if I'm doing something to run away from, it's just going to come back up. It's that beach ball that I'm pushing down. If I'm doing something to embrace, it's, you know, we all have different ways that we process our experiences and becoming clear about what that is for us, and doing that from the motivation of discovery and curiosity rather than fear and avoidance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And judgment, right?
Yeah. And judgment. Exactly.
Seeing judgment. Yeah. Really good. Okay. We've touched a little bit now on practices. Like this is a practice of processing emotion. I know you are very well versed with the Bhagavad Gita. Mm. Can you talk a little bit about, I guess, your experience in exploring that And how has that affected your daily practice, just in your life?
Totally. It's for me, I remember in high school, actually, it was, you know, I grew up in Arizona. I'm originally from Arizona. And, you know, growing up in high school, or, you know, through elementary school, I was always kind of interested in the arts. And I remember, I got an album of Bob Dylan. It was like some kind of I don't know who like arranged this, but it was Victoria. Yeah. It was Victoria's Secret's album of like Bob Dylan's music. It was the strangest thing.
What a weird mix.
Yeah. Anyway, I got it. And it was like a number of his best hits, you know, Victoria's Secret's had put out. And I listened to that. And I remember being so affected by the clarity, the authenticity of the poetry that he was singing about of so many things, about the government, about his own emotions, about relationships. I'd never really heard lyrics so plainly put in the style that Bob Dylan was doing. And simultaneously, I got into Bob Marley. So it sounds like I'm kind of derailing a little bit, but these two Bobs, they really opened
all the
up,
Bobs.
All the Bobs. They opened up a doorway for me to really start questioning my own life and yeah. self and values and really defining that for myself. So that took a pretty exciting journey throughout high school, just reading a bunch. I devoured books, not necessarily all like there, a lot of them were fiction books, but just books about a lot of like coming of age books. You know, for me, that was like a huge thing. I was going through this, like, okay, I'm becoming a man, I'm becoming an adult. Mm. Who is that? Like, what is that? What is that all about? And really trying to shed from myself the things I had just inherited, the political conceptions, the spiritual conceptions, the social conceptions, as much as I could, trying to shed and create a palette that was clean, that I could paint something fresh. And when I got into college, I had, you know, I'd been in the process of starting to build that up again. I was resonating with ideas of the East. I was resonating with, you know, kind of understanding the universal connection that we all experience, right, in different ways. And I met these two monks on campus. They had just come from San Diego. I was going to school in Flagstaff, Arizona, Northern Arizona University. Mm-hmm. I was studying music. It was my freshman year. And I met these two monks, and they're just sitting on campus playing these strange looking instruments, wearing these strange clothes. I'm like, who the hell are these guys? And I was like, something inside. I was having kind of a shitty day also, just feeling a bit meh, you know, and I was like, I want to jam with these guys. I feel like that'll really like uplift my spirit. So I'm like, hey, can I come bring my drum? And they're like, yeah, sure. So I brought my big djembe and I was like playing with these guys. And, and it was afterwards that, you know, we were speaking a little bit and I was like, what are you guys all about? And like, we're really about connecting with, you know, our higher consciousness, connecting with the love supreme, connecting with God. I was like, oh, like God is in, as in like the energy that we're all a part of. He's like, yeah. And the ancient yogic texts describe that not only is God the energy, right? Mm. But that God is actually everything within our conception and outside our conception, right? That God is that supreme, beautiful person, that love supreme, that's connecting all beings, right? Beyond religion, beyond spirituality, this dynamic force of consciousness, of awareness that we're all connected to. And that like blew my mind. So I was like, wow. They're like, yeah, come. We have these like little meditations. And I was like, okay, I'll come. And I didn't go right away. But eventually I wandered into one of the meditations and it was like this musical meditation of, it's called kirtan, of chanting and singing. And that just took me on a whole dynamic journey, like through mantra meditation, through it was dancing, it was loud, it was exciting, high energy. Yeah. And then they would cook these vegetarian feasts and it just like these feasts just blew my mind.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, it was a very organic process for myself of diving into what was I really looking for and recognizing that what I was looking for was like knocking on my door.
Yeah.
And so I was in this kind of existential, like, okay, I got to figure out who I am, like what I'm doing. I was training at that point to, I was learning Spanish and I was training riding my bike long distances with huge backpacks. And I was training to ride my bicycle down to South America. That was my goal. I was like fixed on that. So I'd ride like 20 miles into the woods and then I'd camp for like 3 days and I'd ride back.
With a big ass backpack.
With a big ass backpack. And so this was like, I was, and all the while I was incorporating some of the things that I'd learned from monks, because I had this spiritual calling and I realized that there was so much more than what I was just doing. I was studying music and it was nice. And it was, you know, I felt like I came to this point where I had everything that I really ever thought I wanted. Mm-hmm. I lived in this really cool house. Mm-hmm. I lived in a really cool town. I had this super cool, you know, I had this guy that I played music with, and like, it was the music that I always wanted to play. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, school was coming easy for me. I had, you know, a job that was like simple enough and I made enough money. It was like everything that I could have wanted as a college student, had all this, you know. And I realized very starkly one evening we were having a house show. I would invite a bunch of people to the house. I'd go and find like local musicians and I'd have them come to the house that I was staying at. We'd have these like huge house parties.
Dope.
You know, local bands. It was great. And here I was like with my band, like headlining almost. And I remember singing this song that I'd written about, like one of the, a calling part of the song was love. I was like, love, love, love. I would just chant love. And then I'd have people sing back. It's kind of this like bluesy folk reggae kind of style. Chanting love, love, love. And everyone's chanting love, love, love back. And I remember having this sharp, like now I'm almost feeling it again, like this sharp blow in my chest of like, none of us here really know what love is.
Oh, yeah.
Like it was just very shallow. Like I just saw the veil was lifted in many ways. And I saw the shallowness of what I was experiencing, what I was hoping for. I realized that even though I had everything that I wanted on kind of a comfort level, I was so like anxious and dissatisfied about like where I was going and what I was doing and who I was. And from that moment, it invited me to really look at what I had been given already. And that turned into a desire to really commit myself and dive in. So I ended up just started taking those like solo trips still and then going camping. And I would like just meditate in the woods. I would chant and like read and just kind of pray.
Yeah.
And eventually I had this opportunity to travel with these monks, or they were in a van just going around the country, going to different like art festivals, music festivals, and like teaching meditation to people. And I was like brand new and they're like, do you want to come? And I'm like, yeah. And I just dipped.
The rookie on the bus.
I just dropped school. I was like, no, like there was a bunch of people that I just, they didn't know what happened to me. They're like, what the hell happened?
Right.
And
right.
It was like years later, I connected with some of them. They're like, yeah, I had no idea where you went. And you know, I was on a bus to Chicago. Like I got on a bus at 2 a.m. and there I was off to Chicago where I was going to meet some of these monks that were traveling, and called my parents. I'm like, hey, I'm on a bus to Chicago. They're like, what? and there I was for the whole summer, really just studying Bhagavad Gita, and whatever I would study, I was just like sharing with people. And then I did that for 5 years, just living as a monk and diving into the practices of Bhagavad Gita, the knowledge of the Vedic culture, and trying to share as much as I could of what I was getting myself.
Wow.
So that's kind of the brief overview of the journey, but it was, you know, for me, it just became, I saw the Gita and the wisdom that it embodied.
Yeah.
It was a living wisdom. And part of that was I was seeing people living it out in their day-to-day life. And I was seeing its natural effect on my own life.
Like you were seeing, by these people you're seeing, you're talking about the monks?
The monks, the monks and even just the effect of when I'd meet people and we'd talk about topics from the Gita.
Right.
We'd have like we'd do like these informal classes of the Gita and we just like meet a bunch of people during the day, and then we'd gather everyone around, and just the effect that the knowledge had on people.
Yeah.
And it was over and over reinforcing my own experience of like, wow, this is beyond tradition or language or religion. This is something essential to the living entity.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it to be essential. And so that living knowledge was so affirming.
Mm. Very cool, man. What a story. And it sounds like the biggest takeaway or learning that you had just from you telling that story was that love, that supreme love that connects us all. Is that fair to say? Was that the big, is that before you maybe felt disjointed from others, a little divided, the separate, and it sounds now that you feel like this connection, you really feel love. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say it's the awareness and the power of selfless service, like understanding that as the ideal, like this ideal of service for the sake of service.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And being able to have clarity around the ideal of my life, like how do I want to show up? Mm-hmm. How do I want to connect with others, right? And it's, you know, it's, and in all honesty, it's a growing, it's for me, I'm still in that process. I'm in that process of like, okay, how do I embody that all the time? How do I embody that in every situation that I'm in, right? And at the same time, I've never felt a clearer connection with the ideal. I've never felt more clarity around why I know what my where my compass is pointed.
Right.
I know. I. It's easier for me to see when I'm off because I know where I want to go.
Right. You know? Right. You've got some direction.
Cat, right. Cheshire cat. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. So for me, it was that direction, and it was, and I think this kind of goes to what I had shared with you in the voice messages I sent, which is, you know, being raised in kind of I was born, my family was Catholic when I was born, and then we started going to a Christian church, and I had so many powerful experiences in the church that were undeniable, but they were more like few and far between for me. It was like, and I didn't see always the embodiment of that knowledge consistently. And you know, for me, after like kind of taking this whole journey into like Eastern thought, I've been able to appreciate the Western conception of spirituality and see that Jesus and so many other great teachers are actually saying the same thing in so
many
the time, place, and circumstance. But for me, it was that the opportunity to experience that every day.
Right.
Like even now, like having a date, like similar to, I mean, it's changed a little bit since I was a monk, but my practice as since I was a monk is about the same. It's about 2 hours every morning, about 3 hours, 2 hours like meditating, 1 hour like reading or studying. Right. Yeah. And it's an opportunity every day to have that like transformative, almost mystical experience of connection.
Wow. So every day you do 2 hours of meditation immediately upon waking up.
Not immediately. So generally what my day will look like, I'll wake up around like 5:30, 6 if I went to bed super late. And what I like to do is I get some water, some hot water with lemon. And that really just helps me kind of like start the system, flush the system. And then I just read for half an hour, an hour.
Right.
Absorb myself in wisdom, start my day. You know, I notice a palpable difference. Sometimes I have this alarm on my iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an app called Alarmy because I've always had a challenge waking. And it's a great app.
With the snooze button. Yeah,
I've always had a challenge with the snooze button, but Alarmy doesn't let you snooze.
Oh,
yeah. Get up and take a picture of something.
What?
Like, set the night before. So the picture is like all the way in the middle of my house. I have to take a picture of this book rack. And I take a picture of all these books. I'm like, okay, I'm already out of bed. So... But the challenge can come if I forget to turn off airplane mode, it'll like put up news articles. And then if I notice a difference, if I get dragged into like a news article and that's the first vibration that I take in, or if the first vibration that I take in is sacred sound, it's spiritual knowledge, it's sacred wisdom. I notice a huge difference for my entire day then is different. So I'll normally read for like a half an hour, an hour. And then according to the day schedule, I'll do like all of my meditation in one setting, which takes hour and 45, 2 hours, or I'll like do some in the morning and some in the evening. But yeah, being able to do that, and it kind of totals out to like 3 hours or so. It's what keeps me grounded. And I find that, it can be challenging, especially, you know, as we, you know, I'm married now, so it's, and I've work, I'm running my own business. So even amidst all those things, right. But I find that it's never really a question of time. Mm-hmm. It's more of a question of taste. Like, what do I have taste for? Because right. What I have time for, I do. Or I mean, what I have taste for, I do.
I see.
If I don't have time for it. If that
so makes sense. I think it makes sense. You're basically saying that like you don't do 3 hours just because that seems like a good number. And because you're like, I'm going to meditate for 3 hours a day. It's because that is literally what you choose to do and what you feel, you know, fills you up and really, you know, helps you to show up in the other areas of your life to in the way that you want to. Is that fair to say?
It's that. And it's like, because I had 5 years of
right.
committedly doing that day in and day out. I notice who I am when I do, and I notice who I am when I don't.
Mm.
Right. So what I mean by it's oftentimes not about taste, or excuse me, it's not about time, but it's about taste. It's, you know, when we have to be honest with ourselves, like when we are building a sacred practice or a meditative practice, like, I don't want to blow myself out that I'm just doing too much because I'm trying to be some kind of advanced spiritual yogi or guru or something. Mm-hmm. Right. And also, you know, cultivating a desire to dive deeper. Like, how can I make more of my life a space of contemplative transformation?
Mm-hmm.
That I'm holding space for that. I'm prioritizing that. Mm-hmm. Right. So we prioritize what we enjoy doing. We prioritize what we have a taste for. And so once we get a taste, and that's why retreat is so powerful, right? Yeah. We go on retreat so that we get this higher taste of like, wow, I can add more of this to my life. Right. Yeah. And then that's the idea. It's like, how do I add more? How do I add more into my daily life as I'm moving through the various chapters?
Right. So it's like you go on retreat, you push the envelope a little bit, you push to places maybe you don't go in your daily practice. Yeah. And then you come back to your daily practice and you're like, ooh, I'm going to adjust it like this. And this is this is the secret sauce that's going to fill me up.
Yeah. Yeah. And just, you know, just like going to the gym, it's like, you know, you don't always want to become stagnant. Maybe, maybe eventually you get into a routine. That you're like, oh, this is great. Like this number of reps on this thing. But if you're like, if you go, say when you start working out, you're like, okay, I do 10 reps of biceps. I do 10 reps in the legs, run for 10 minutes, done.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Then, I mean, it's expected that you're going to improve that, increase that, right? According to your, and this also goes to like your goals. Like what are your exercise goals? Right.
Right.
And, or the ideal, like what is the ideal and moving towards that ideal. So it's learning how to grow along with our practice and have our practice grow along with us.
Boom. Yeah. I love that because I really believe that like as human beings, we are meant to grow. Like we are in our natural state in growth. And when we get into periods of stagnation, which is very freaking easy to do, right? You get into a routine. You're like, this is what I do every day. We start to die a little bit, right? Yeah. Like our soul gets constricted, and it doesn't feel free and doesn't have that ability to expand and to evolve as a human. Like that's just my experience. You know, maybe we aren't meant to grow, but that's how I've experienced it.
Well, and it's interesting how our conversation's kind of tagged back to what we started with, emotion, energy and motion, right? That we're meant to kind of continue evolving in our relationship with our emotions and our relationship with others, right? And so continuing to evolve, it takes a few things. It takes an increased desire to evolve and change. And it takes one thing that I'm very passionate about. It takes kind of ceremony around that, right? Ceremony around transition, around growth. Because a lot of times in society, it's very unceremonious. you're just supposed to figure it out. It's like you're in a relationship and all of a sudden you go to another relationship, or you're in one job and you go to another job, right? But what if we cultivated more intention around those shifts, right? Yeah. Or when life throws us a curveball and it's a shift that we weren't expecting, right? Like all of a sudden it's like, you know, a lot of men, I've talked to a lot of men that really have challenge with this, where it's like, well, my wife just left me. It's like, so now you're faced with divorce, you know? So it's like, what do you do then? Yeah. Right. So, but being able to then create a sacred cocoon where that moment of transition is not lost. It's not lost to obscurity and confusion. It's not lost to resentment and victimhood, right? But it's claimed and owned. And then we actually move and evolve from that space what's the word I'm looking for? Transition or upheaval. That's the word. Right. When we face upheaval, how am I growing from that moment?
Right.
And yeah. I think when we have a practice of creating that sacred cocoon, that sacred container,
right.
And we intentionally fill that sacred container up with substance, with substantial growth, then we're able to evolve automatically. Yeah. We're able to face ourselves and our challenges and you know, our resistance, and find breakthrough and transformation in that.
Right. Yeah. The word that came up for me as you're saying that is like resilience, right?
Mm, yeah.
It's like when moments of test and challenge come up, if like you say, you have that sacred cocoon, you're able in those moments to, going back to what you said as well, like respond in that moment, right? Yeah,
totally.
Which is not that victimhood response where it's like, oh, why is this happening to me? Why are these emotions? Why did they make me feel this way? It's like, oh, I'm feeling this way. Let's dig into this. Let's find the gem, and let's use this as an opportunity to evolve and to grow, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was having a conversation this morning. A part of that is, you know, because sometimes ceremony and ritual can be kind of an external thing, right? It's like it's easy to go through the motions when I have ritual. And I think that's what has turned a lot of people off from, in general, like organized religion and kind of more traditional religions. A lot of time it's that kind of, it's how ritual can become heartless. We can forget why it is that we do something. But I think it's a two-part process, right? It's that when I'm internally cultivating something of substance, right, then I can use that kind of the external container of the ritual, of the ceremony, of the coming of age, of the society around me. I can use that to kind of acknowledge and force and promote that inner transformation, right? And part of that is surrounding ourselves with potent community, with people that are actually of the same desire for growth, right? They also want to expand and evolve. They're not satisfied just being unchallenged and, silent in their in their journey of life, right? Being able to find people that are also committed to their own upliftment and their development, right? And then that when you have that ceremony to kind of acknowledge the internal transformation that's gone on, it becomes a very powerful duo. Those two elements, and it propels us. It propels us into the next chapter of life.
Yeah, that's so true, man. Because it doesn't matter how much work you're doing yourself, if everyone around you is kind of pulling you back into those old patterns that you're so used to and then familiar with, and are helping you to push down that beach ball, then you're going nowhere fast.
Yeah, and I think that's what's hard about growth for a lot of us. It's the acknowledging that I may have to let go of some things or some situations or things that are holding me back, right? That I'm holding onto a bag of rocks and I'm trying to cross a river, and the people on the other side are like, we want you here, but you can't bring those rocks. I'm like, but I love these rocks. I've had these rocks forever. you gotta leave them down, otherwise you're gonna sink. And recognizing, okay, what rocks am I trying to bring over into the new, into this new chapter that's beckoning me, that's welcoming me. It's not outside of who I am, mm-hmm. right? It's just a bigger me than I'm used to. Mm-hmm. It's a bigger expression of self that I'm used to. I'm used to kind of the small game me, where I'm just like playing the small game, the short game, and survival. But like, what about that thriving space?
Boom. Yeah. To get there, you got to drop some of those rocks. They're a little heavy, right? They're a little heavy. And weirdly shaped and not serving you.
And I've been carrying them around for so long, and I'm familiar with them. I've grown quite attached to them, and that's why it's exciting. It's also very fearful, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, and then it's like that next, you know, the hero's journey, right? It's like going into the dark cave and mm-hmm. Going into what is unknown and what feels unsafe, mm-hmm. and coming out the hero, right? Being a real hero.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. That's it, man. Love this conversation. I've got, this is the final question I've got for you. And it's, Ananda, what does it mean to you to be a man? What does being a man mean to you?
Man. Being a man means to be responsible. Although that can sound a bit cliche, it means that as a man, I'm responsible for my life. I'm responsible for my emotions. I'm responsible for the situation and circumstance that I'm in. It means that I'm responsible to give shelter to others. I think one thing that I saw living in a monastery with other monks, it's, you know, especially it was young men that I was living with. There are female monasteries, but I was obviously in a men's monastery. And one thing I saw is that if we come to a certain age when it's our turn to be responsible for others, that if I maintain the consciousness of just being taken care of, mm-hmm. and I don't care for, then I'm gonna be stifled in my growth as a man. I'm gonna be resentful that mm-hmm. I'm not actually doing what I'm called to do in so many ways. And so that looks different for different people. For some people, it looks like having a family. For others, you know, there are monks that I know that I was a monk with that are still monks, and they're gonna be monks their entire life. Mm-hmm. But those monks that last their entire life, it's because they find a project, they find people that they can give shelter to, that they can give guidance to. They find something to be responsible for, right? If I shirk responsibility in mm-hmm. the name of comfort, right, mm-hmm. then I'm not going to feel the fulfillment that is meant for men to fulfill. That fulfillment of giving ourselves, giving shelter to other people. So right. I would say, yeah, it's responsibility. It's being responsible for our emotions. It's being responsible for our actions. It's being responsible for others.
Love it. Love it. Radical. Becoming radically responsible.
Radically responsible.
As you said before.
That's right.
Brother, love it. Okay, where can our audience go to follow you, connect with you, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, on Instagram, you can find me at wholeperson.life. This is the coaching company that I run. I work with individuals, high potential individuals that are really looking to upgrade and transform into that next phase and stage of their story. And I serve them in creating that sacred container, in discovering what that looks like for them. What is that sacred container? What are the qualities of that container that they're ready to cultivate and build to carry them into that next big chapter of their life? On Instagram at wholeperson.life, website's coming soon, which will also be wholeperson.life. But other than that, yeah.
Nice. Oh, man, thank you so much for doing this. Really appreciate it and have enjoyed chatting with you. Let's keep in touch, man.
Too. Yeah, I appreciate, like I said, I was very excited when I came across your podcast and listening, and I appreciate your ability to cultivate beautiful conversations. So thank you for having me on. Oh,
thanks, brother. Appreciate you.